I think it'll be such an interesting time to be alive, like 5 to 10 years from now, to see like the data that comes out from like the release of ChatGPT and AI, to see all of this stuff for that has came up from us essentially being in the Wild Wild West for the last few years with all the different things that are coming up with AI.
They keep telling us that it's all over for HR. The age of AI is upon us, and that means HR should be prepared to be decimated. We reject that message. The future of HR won't be handed to us. Instead, it'll be defined by those ready to experiment, adopt, and adapt. Future-proof HR invites these builders to share what they're trying, how it's going, what they've learned, and what's next. We are committed to arming HR with the AI insights to not just survive, but to thrive. Hello and welcome to the Future Proof HR podcast, where we explore how forward-thinking HR leaders are preparing for disruption and redefining what it means to lead people in a changing world. This guest is Chelly Conley, the Director of Global HR and Inclusion at KnowBefore. With 10 plus years in HR, Chelly focuses on empowering teams, cultivating inclusive cultures, and translating fast-moving trends into practical playbooks for leaders and employees. She also serves on her local Sherm board, keeping a pulse on what HR pros are facing on the ground, from a brutally competitive job market to the rise of AI in hiring and L&D. We have a lot of ground to cover. Chelly, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. So tell me a little bit about the market for HR professionals today. I'm just curious like, what you think, because you have a little bit of a pulse on what's going on. You told me it's the toughest market that you've seen. Tell me what's behind that.
Yeah, I hope people didn't hear my sigh like too loudly. That was a visceral reaction that I had to the question about the current HR job market right now. I mean, you know, I don't even want to sugarcoat it for people, at least from the Florida perspective and the Tampa, Florida perspective from where I'm at. It's pretty tough right now. We're seeing a lot of layoffs occur, which I feel like people are able to see that even nationwide. A lot is being affected within the white collar sector that's being impacted as well too. And specifically within HR, within support type of roles. So you're even seeing it within HR, finance, marketing, all through there. And so not only are people being impacted, it is also taking a very long time to find roles as well, too, because the job market has kind of slowed down. So from just qualitative data, from what I've seen in my local Sherm group and whatnot, it's taking people upwards of 9 months, even some people like more towards a year. And that's rough. I think for speaking for anybody, unexpected unemployment for a year would put anybody under any type of duress. So, I mean, I think it's tough right now. And not only is it tough for people impacted by layoffs, it's also tough for people who are new grads who are trying to break into HR right now. And the job market is slowed down. So I feel like it's difficult on both ends, making it difficult as a whole in the industry for people right now.
Yeah, you mean like across seniority levels. So then what do you think is driving this at the moment? Maybe it's a confluence of factors as you're talking to like your peers and you're keeping a pulse on your organization and others like it. There's some like obvious factors, I guess, the macroeconomic situation there's some like uncertainty at the moment, right? But I feel like there's been uncertainty like every quarter since COVID. But, you know, like what do you think is something that's like, what are the unique confluence of factors that's making, especially for HR professionals, right? And becoming a little bit tougher than ever before.
I think the fact is how competitive it is. I mean, because when you talk about even from the perspective of like new grads trying to get in, they're not only competing against other new grads, they're competing against people who've been laid off. And those people are coming with years of experience. They're coming with the certifications, the degrees and things like that as well too. So it's putting it in a position where it's making it more competitive than it's ever been before. And also as well too, HR, I've been in HR for probably 13 years now, and I can say when I first was getting into it, it felt difficult. So I can't imagine how difficult it must feel now. But the reason why it felt so difficult 13 years ago is HR as an industry is also very experienced based. You know, you can take into consideration, like, you know, getting your MBA or getting your master's and the certifications. But at the end of the day, it does require a lot of experience. And so I think that combined with the competitiveness, with the slowing job market, is what makes it so difficult right now for people to land a job.
This is a core theme, but we haven't really hit it, I don't think, podcast, but when we're talking about future-proofing HR, part of it, so saying, hey, we need to define for ourselves, right, how to future-proof ourselves, the professionals across all layers of seniority, right, and all sort of subspecialties. But from your perspective, if you're like talking to your experienced friends who are like out there looking and it's been a while and things aren't like clicking, and maybe there's already part of the background and context is like in the COVID era and like the big zip up and back down and everything in between over the last few years, there's been a lot of HR professionals who feel a sense of burnout. And then on top of that, if you're laid off or left a role in the last year or two and hoping to get back in, but you've been stuck in limbo for some time, it can get disheartening. There might be a little bit of an exodus out, but if you're talking to one of your more experienced colleagues, what advice would you have for them? Is there anything like you need to change about either your mindset or approach, or what should you be doing to maximize your chances in this particular job market?
That's a really good question. And when I think on that, I want to be careful with my words, because I'm sure that people who are experienced and are actively searching and have been actively searching for a year, the only difference between them and me is that they were impacted by a layoff. And so it's just like, when giving advice, I'm sure it's almost like getting advice fatigue. It's okay, your network is your net worth, but make sure to reach out to the recruiter, make sure you're doing this. I'm sure there's only so much of that type of advice that they can receive within a year on top of the experience they already have. It's not like they were new to this. And so it's like that, I feel like I want to be very particular with my words, with the type of advice I want to give. And I think what it comes down to, because it's like you said, we're talking about experienced people, so they already know that they have the experience. But and remembering that, because there will be times when you go through interview processes where it'll be like the fifth, sixth, whatever round, you're interviewing with AI, you're getting lunch with the team to see if you're a culture fit. And I'm putting culture fit in air quotes for people and stuff, and may still get that rejection. And a lot of the times, especially from the US perspective, we tie our sense of worth and our identity to our job title. And so I think that this, it's a lot of emotions that are raw to navigate during this time that may throw you off in regards to how you see yourself and your worth. And I feel like my advice, and I'll put that in quotes as well too, is to remember to stay grounded in who you are and what you bring to the table. And that just because you are impacted by a layoff doesn't mean you're starting from ground zero. You're coming to the table with your experience and who you are as a person, and what you brought to the table before, you still bring to the table now. Mm-hmm. And I think it's easy to forget that when you're going through a process of long-term unemployment and you're being subjected to rejection, which is hard for anybody. And especially if you have been in this cycle in a while, or you know what I mean? Like that's hard to balance. And so I think my advice would just be to continue to remember exactly who you are, and also to continue to connect with people who will remind you who you are, which I know can be difficult because, like I said, unexpected unemployment means that some people may have been put into survival mode at that point. So right. I know that probably sounds easier said than done, but trying to stay true to yourself in those moments, because I think there will be times where your confidence can get skewed or the experience can start to play tricks on your mind as to where you bring value.
That's sound advice, and from a place of caution. I appreciate that. Maybe we can get to a little bit of the other side of this, which is folks who are in HR today and are in this environment, right? Where there's the other side of it as well, where there's like teams being asked to do more with less, headcount freezes, leaner teams on the HR front. What are you seeing out there, like amongst your colleagues in terms of the folks who are looking to run programs, and then has there become more of a narrow focus, or how do you still make an impact if this is the environment? And is what I'm discussing a lot of what you're seeing at this moment as well for those who are like on the inside, who are actively running and looking to execute on programs?
Yeah, I think so. I think that is a lot of what's happening is a high level of burnout, because as you mentioned before, it's HR was difficult as it is because you're managing humans, you're managing emotions and trying to balance policies while also balancing the human aspect of things as well too. So it's, HR is already difficult as it is, but it seems like from 2020, as you said, it is not let up, because even from the beginning of 2020, it was like navigating everybody working from home, and all of a sudden remote policies need to be out, like how teams function in remote levels, like getting your managers upskilled on how to manage teams remotely and seeing those pitfalls within skill or within skill sets for managers, because there's some managers where they're not able to, there was gaps that were shown as far as their management level went versus remote versus in office and stuff. And even from going there, like what you talked about with the pendulum swing, because there was times even coming out of the, I think in COVID, where it was like, it was an employee market. And so navigating what that looks like and seeing the type of needs and the needs of employees were also changing, because COVID made people see that they wanted to prioritize things that were important to them, whether it was their family, their children, their health. And so they were coming to the table with like new requirements. Then it was a pendulum swing back, and now it's more of an employer market and AI and all these things. And also not to mention a new change in administrations. And so also dealing with rapid law change, and that's from a federal level and a state level. And there's HR people that manage all of that and stuff. And so I think it's a high level of burnout coming from HR right now with trying to manage all the time. And what you said, doing more with less and still expected to make an impact. I mean, that's really tough. And that's a lot of situations that people are in, and they're having to not only take care of themselves, they're having to also take care of their team, which typically comes at the expense of trying to take care of themselves. So it's tough. It's really tough. I think that's like what I see. I'm actually, ironically, it's like funny that you bring this up, because I'm getting ready to do like a session on recentering yourself with your power, purpose, and connecting, because of the fact that and it's specifically for HR people, because of the fact that we put so much, we're always responsible for employees and balancing the organization's needs and everything else in between. And that gets difficult to do for any chronic amount of time. And like what we talked about, it's been since 2020 that has been at a high level.
Man, so do you think doing more with less, is that the HR teams have traditionally always been lean, I would say? It's not like the most over-resourced function within the organization anyway, historically. But how are you personally, or like folks that you know, navigating that at this moment? Are there like certain types of programs that you're like investing more in? Or basically, are you pushing back and kind of saying, we're going to do less with less, or we're going to focus on these areas and this matters and that doesn't matter because we're not like properly resourced for it? Or like, how do you just think about those trade-offs in terms of either quarterly planning or a day-to-day tactical activities? When we say more with less, there could be any number of things you're supposedly asked to do more with, right? Like it could be anything from onboarding, offboarding, manager training. We're going to go deeper in on a compensation program, or we're going to do an organizational network. We're going to go into people analytics. We need to do a new HR system. We want to train everybody up on a new remote policy. There's a million things that you could be doing. But like when the message is, okay, well, this is a constraint. This is where we're at. Like, how do you like think about navigating what to invest in versus not?
I think you have to look at it from the business perspective and make sure that what you're doing is tied for the business goals and where they're going. Because even though there may be a narrative where do more with less or whatever that may be, at the end of the day, a business is a business. So if you're aligning your stuff if you're able to, I'm going to make that caveat, because I know there's probably a whole bunch of HR people who are listening and they're not necessarily in a position where HR is seen as like a strategic business partner. And so what I'm saying may sound more like La Land type of stuff if you're not in that position where you can make strategic impact. So I want to caveat that, so that way I don't get eye rolls for what I'm about to say. But when you connect things to the business, you don't have to worry about whether or not they will be money, because that's one thing about corporate is I feel like they will pull money out of the sky if they think it's something that's going to make more money. So if you're worried about a program that you're going to invest in, if you make the business case and you're in that position to get that type of leadership buy-in to show like, this is how this directly impacts this, and this is how this directly impacts revenue, money, whatever it may be, like there will be money to be found somewhere. And so I feel like you got to kind of almost pick and choose, especially if you're in that like lean stage, you have to choose what hill you want to die on. Like, you have to choose, like, what hill is worth investing in. And some stuff is just, I can't get to it right now, and be okay with that, and have that type of a balance of pick and choose. So you have to be strategic with your time and effort when you're in that. And if you do, I smirked when you said doing less with less. And I'm like, I don't think it could ever be that, because then we'll end up getting fired. But, but definitely doing more with less.
But that's part of the pushback that's needed. There's only so much that can be accomplished with a certain amount of time. And yeah, I think expectations could be unreasonable, but maybe the distinction is kind of what you're talking about, right? The expectations from the business or your broader set of stakeholders is coming from one lens, but the expectations maybe are often set from within, because there's like a quote perfect way of doing HR in people's minds, right? Of all the things that you're supposed to do, but in reality may not be valued. And maybe that's something that you need to, like, on an individual organizational basis, kind of come to a conclusion on, and like, where do you like invest in? Maybe the more aspect of doing more with less is more self-imposed in some ways, in some organizations, than imposed by the organization. Just a thought.
Well, it's funny you say that about how people have expectations around HR and what they're supposed to do. And this is from what I hear from just different colleagues and stuff like that, and being in the HR field for as long as I have. And the issue is that what HR is supposed to do and what they actually do, there's definitely a gap in between that, because so many people have their different versions and definitions of what HR does. Like, you could go out and like survey, I guarantee you, 100 people, and you will get like a different response as to what HR does. And a lot of that is going to be based off of their, most likely, either what they've heard word of mouth or their lived experience that they had with HR. And I feel like a lot of the times the people who speak about it are ones that probably had negative experience with HR. So it's, if they only saw their HR team when they were being hired and fired, that's going to be their definition of like, HR is just there just to hire, fire, and stuff like that. If they worked at an organization that really focused on culture and implementing different programs, different engagement programs, upskilling and stuff, that's how they'll remember HR and their interactions. And so it's tough, because that's another thing that HR is having to go up against, is people's different viewpoints as to what HR should be doing and what they're actually doing. And their definitions.
Yeah, great point. And it's almost like a branding exercise, right? There's been the movement of rebranding it. Maybe there's arguably more than just a branding, but from human, it went from benefits department to human resources like many decades ago, but now a rebranding into people operations or the people team, as opposed to like human resources, because it's more people centric and culture. And now we're investing in that major resource as like a way to try to train and educate the market almost. And I think you're right. It's both, because your examples resonate for both what an employee, a disgruntled employee, might search for and think about on Reddit or Glassdoor, and like what yeah, think about with HR, but also crucially what a CEO or a CFO or a hiring committee or a board, in terms of what their expectations are, that also can be all over the map, right?
Yeah. And you find out as soon as you get in there, or either maybe somewhat in your interview process, but then you really find out once you start working in the day to day as to where the priorities are and whatnot. And it's interesting trying to navigate like those different areas. And you made me smirk when you said Reddit, because that's exactly the point. HR gets lit up in Reddit a lot of the times. I'll be honest, sometimes it's difficult to defend, even from an HR perspective, because it's like you can't deny someone's lived experience. Like the way that people are being handled in their layoffs and stuff and things like that, which, you know, can be like insensitive. And how do you really argue that? Like, maybe like those things like probably should have been handled better and whatnot. And so it's hard going up against that narrative. And it's exactly like what you talked about with the people and culture rebrand. That was always interesting to me. And I can appreciate it if it's actually what it is at face value. The issue is that there's organizations that are rebranding to people and culture, but they're still focused on the party planning, the admin aspect and things like that. The name, it won't matter if you change it, because if you're still showing up looking like you're not strategically involved and you're just here for food, fun, and activities, you're still going to be fighting the same battle no matter what tag you put on it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's a great point. The rebranding is only as successful as the activities that follow it on. But if you're just doing the same things, which often is the case, it doesn't really change much. So I guess that's like yet another battle. I guess what I heard is like the definitions of what HR really should be doing is so variant. And I guess my perspective is that's probably only increased in the last 5 years because the variance across organizations, like of what are the actual things this department does, because in some places you hear about it being like combined with like workplace and even the CFO's office and IT. In others, you hear it's like it's fully administration and that's the hiring and firing and compliance and that's it. But it's all some format of the same function. At the highest level in terms of like branding. We like to think about the future, right? But it's useful to kind of like understand where we are at this moment, right, Shelly? But where do you think it's all headed? Like, you know, from your perspective, you know, what should a solid and productive, useful, aligned HR department look like? What should they be doing that maybe they aren't today, or what things should we not be doing maybe that we are? Or like, how would you think about the gap between what you often see and like what you think where we should really get to?
You know, it's really tough because it's like when the first came to mind was like the balance between business and human beings and where to strike that balance, I feel is always where, especially this is speaking from a perspective of HR is seen as a strategic like partner within the organization. Because if you're a strategic partner, that means that is the tightrope that you walk is trying to balance those things. And so I think in a perfect world and in the future, especially with how much things are changing with, I know we talked about a little bit earlier with coming into play as well too, which in theory should relieve some of those admin duties at some point, which means that it should be evolving into HR being more from that strategic side and that and connecting to the business side as well too. And I want to be very specific with my words because there are a lot of HR professionals who do have that business mindset as well, but they do miss the boat on the human aspect and being able to handle things with empathy and being able to balance business continuity, but also understanding like human experience and what's happening. And so it's like trying to blend most of those things, which I think is exactly where HR needs to go. Because if anything, like what we talked about the last 4 years, especially within just from the US side, life is not letting up. Like, and it's not going to. If anything, the last 5 years have shown us from just the rapid changes in administration, the pandemic, unemployment, AI, all these things and stuff, like life is not going to stop. And people need to be able, they can't leave all of that at the door. Like they can't leave whatever it is that there needs to be a balance and a flexibility there where people can do both. They can balance the needs of their life and also the needs of the business, whether that's you being a parent, a caregiver, you're navigating your own health issues and whatnot. There needs to be able to strike a balance to where you're able to maintain business continuity, but still have that respect for employees and that empathy for the things that so many people are going through.
This has been a fantastic conversation so far. If you haven't already done so, make sure to join our community. We're building a network of the most forward-thinking HR and people operations professionals who are defining the future. I will personally be sharing news and ideas around how we can all thrive in the age of AI. You can find it at goclery.com/cleary-community. Now back to the show. I love that you brought the example on the other side of the pendulum, because that is a reality too, right? Which is, it's like we're so business focused that actually is detrimental eventually to the business. But like where if you're not treating employees like people because you're just like focused on the numbers, ultimately that will have an eroding impact on your culture and your talent density and ability to attract as an employer brand of a place, a destination for top talent, and that which will impact business, just a long lead time. So it's important to balance that aspect as well. I hear you loud and clear on that. But you also like mentioned, okay, like maybe these things will evolve so we can focus more on that and get rid of some of the administrative levels of things. But let's talk about, yeah, like AI a little bit more, because first there's promise, there's peril, but when we were talking earlier, Shelly, you're talking about just sometimes it's Kafka-esque comes to mind. So like I think you're telling me about like your experience of like AI bots for like people in like HR. Well, obviously it's put in place from a talent acquisition standpoint by other colleagues of ours in HR itself, right? And the talent acquisition side and other kind of companies. Tell me about what, like, overall with bots and first round interviews and just the interview processes and how it's evolving, maybe with both these elements, right? You're like the human in this case, an HR professional looking to get their next role, but as well as like on the talent acquisition HR side, like why or why would you not use these tools?
Oh man, and that's a tough balance as well too, because we were talking before, like I had a friend who she's been actively job searching, I think since January. So it's almost been like 10 months now. And she called me as soon as she got off the phone, or texted me, was like, I just interviewed with an AI bot. And I thought she was joking. Like I wrote back laughing emojis and was just like, but how did it go? And she was like, no, like his name was AI Brandon and I interviewed with an AI bot. And I was like, I was literally that emoji where like the brain explodes. Like for me, like I can't grasp that. I would have to like learn about that more as to what the company is like seeking to get out of that, or like what information do they think they're going to get from somebody like having them go through an AI bot like interview round? Because to me, that from an employee perspective or from a user perspective and a candidate perspective, it seems like that would be a turnoff because of the lack of human connection. And it's like you're asking somebody to dedicate their time to come interview with your company and you send AI. But I almost equate it to, say right now, when we were talking about me coming on the podcast and all of a sudden I came on and it was like you and like your Firefly notes.
Sometimes people accuse me of that anyway and they're not sure, but I'd like to think it's pretty clear. Hope you can hear it in the voices coming out. But that's going to that same trade-off, like you said, because whatever the company and whatever industry, wherever they're at, there's got to be a talent acquisition or HR leader, professional who is like trying to do more with less and saying, oh gosh, we got to fix this pipeline. Here's a solution that can get us more efficient and we can get to like our stage three of our interview pipeline more efficiently. So let's try this out.
Yeah, you were supposed to have 100 people hired yesterday, so let's do. So it's like you get the both sides and it's like, where is that middle to where people, because, you know, in the recruiting process, that's the first part of the employee life cycle is the candidate process. That's your first experience and interaction with that company. So it's pretty important. Like I said, I feel like from my opinion, I would have to understand more of what that company would, what they were looking to get out of it. Like, what are they hoping to achieve in order to be like, okay, I got information here in order to move them to the next round. Yeah. But from face value, it just looks like it lacks like a human touch. And I think that's also something to point out as well, is with AI being implemented into all these different HR functions, there still needs to be an element of human oversight or human touch like that. Because AI also brings in everything from the internet and search, which means it's going to bring in bias as well too. So there's some things where I think some people may be jumping the gun and trying to use AI as a complete like replacement, where it just needs to be used as a tool. And so making sure to actually go through whatever it is, like Six Sigma process planning, all that type of stuff, and finding those checkpoints where that human oversight can be, while still saving yourself time, maybe from the actual manual labor of it there. But there needs to be those guardrails up.
Yeah. And depending on the market, you'll get some signal quickly. So if this particular company is turning off a lot of seasoned professionals through their hiring process, they're going to, you know, find that it's harder to convert, and others will find it could be a competitive advantage if someone is talking to a great candidate and it's like a real person, especially like a few years from now. It's like, whoa, okay, you're like serious about me. And like already you're like set up to convert better like from day one, if this becomes more of the norm. Similar to how I think some remote and hybrid companies are able to have a competitive advantage by offering that as
flexibility
for their employees, right? Versus others. It's just like a leg up in that recruiting funnel.
You know, something else as well too. So this is something that my organization went through, and like, it was actually, they had published and wrote about it and stuff, is that also it's another side of the balance of human oversight and navigating this new world, is that there's also people doing deep fakes to interview. And there's people who are getting like hired on as deep fake. They're going through rounds with human people. So it's even like, you know, they're still having that human checkpoint and they're doing like AI deepfakes in order to make it through certain interview rounds. My organization had posted about it because they actually had hired somebody named, I think, Kyle, who had deepfaked as a different person. And it actually ended up being like, I think like a hacker or something like that as well, too. And so that's another thing that, you know, I feel like,
yeah,
that I feel like laws haven't caught up with AI, that we're still out in like the Wild Wild West, which also makes me feel like I feel like it'll be such a I use fun loosely, but I feel like it'll be actually, I'll change the word to interesting. I think it'll be such an interesting time to be alive, like 5 to 10 years from now, to see like the data that comes out from like the release of ChatGPT and AI, to see all of this stuff for that has came up from us essentially being in the Wild Wild West for the last few years with all the different things that are coming up with AI.
Absolutely. It's interesting times, right? So you mentioned that, hey, probably there's going to be this evolution of HR where you're going to be less focused on maybe administrative elements of the role and certain other aspects which can level you up to being more strategic as a function, which is really what what you're imagining most people and most functions should be moving towards, assuming that you have the buy-in and that's both the branding and the expectations that have been set with the rest of the organization. So we talked about that and how AI could potentially play a role. And then we went into this one example where that's something theoretically around interviewing, but it's probably an example, at least from your perspective, of not a good balance, right? Not actually like going in there. So I wanted to ask you, what do you think are good use cases, across the various things that you're working on in an HR department, that could be good use cases of AI coming in and trying to relieve the load in the right way with the right balance?
Ooh, I feel like there's so many administrative aspects to HR that could be used for that. I know for me, when I think back to my days, because I used to be an HR coordinator, HR admin, all those things as well too. Definitely the benefit side I could see being used, because you're having to do a lot of stuff related to billing, things related to payroll, stuff where you're having to make sure things that balance out as well too. Mm-hmm. Also being able to use it as a tool even for strategic communication. HR always, I feel like, plays a tiny role, especially in internal communication as well, which is, I say that loosely because I feel like the communications department is probably being hit even worse with AI right now, with people probably thinking that they could go into ChatGPT and draft something that is appropriate and not have gone through communication schools. I say that loosely of how it could help without pissing off my communications colleagues.
To be fair, I think from an internal communication standpoint, what I'm seeing is it's shifting to be a skill set versus a role. It's specifically internal communication I'm talking about. That might be something that is part of the remit for the HR team. Sometimes it's with comms, for most organizations seem to be part of the HR team, and it's just the HR generalist or somebody along with tools is more responsible for that, versus it's becoming more a relative luxury to have a trained internal communications professional on the team. And it's one of the many doing more with less things that HR has taken on, right?
No, exactly. And I mean, that's difficult because I know just from having one of my best friends is in communications, and she's able to see things through a different lens than I'm not, because it's they go through the psychology of writing and how people will interpret, even down to certain words and stuff. So I could see how their area is struggling as well too, because what you said, doing more with less. So let's put it with HR, give them ChatGPT or whatever and see how it goes. But I guarantee you some organizations that probably, I can't think of any off the top of my head, but I'm sure if we were to Google it, they probably ended up in the news because of it with some type of misstep, some type of misword and things like that as well too. I think being able to use AI tool, whether or not it's for communications, even in process alignment as well too. I've seen people, I have friends who are starting organizations who are using AI for even compensation. They built out a whole compensation tool and figuring out performance management feedback, using some type of AI prompt and practice to go through there. I've seen some of those where basically it's almost like a guide where you can give people managers certain prompts they can walk through for performance management to help them have those conversations, and even for training as well too, using some AI for training. And like I said, there needs to be human-centric oversight over any of those things and touch points. But I do see that's how AI would help some of those areas and functions.
You went through so many different compensation.
Do that real quick, Thomas. My bad.
No, that's great. I mean, but I guess that's the thing. Once you get going, you can imagine there's a lot of use cases and ways to apply it into the day to day. But I think, yeah, the perspective I'm hearing is like caution around how you do it, right? And just it seems like the no brainer is all the middle steps where you're actually getting efficiency around what you're doing, but then the end user experience or the next step, whether it's a PowerPoint presentation or like a meeting with internal stakeholders or an email back with here's the answer to the specific process for an employee, that part is maybe still, you're still getting to that with human oversight, but all the middle steps in between, you can look at like a bunch of efficiencies, right? Compensation, you're not gonna, you know, like suggest to like to finance that this is exactly what our compensation plan should be based on the output directly of AI, but you might have that as one of the steps, right? As you analyze and figure out what you wanna do next. So if you,
you know what I will say though, real quick, on top of it, because something just came to my mind as like a disclaimer out of all the HR functions and stuff as we were like recapping that is do not use AI at all for employment law. Do not use AI for talking about ADA, for talking about FMLA, or talking about any type of employee relations, laws that could break or broke it. Like the employment law lawyers should not be replaced. Like you need to go talk to somebody because a lot of the times AI doesn't have the up-to-date things or they'll even advise things that are illegal. And so that still needs to guardrail. So that's the one section of HR. Do not use AI for employment law.
Yeah, fair. And we also, at least from your perspective, uncovered the interviewing, right? Although that's in talent acquisition, it's significantly used, arguably abused, right? In the talent acquisition funnel. But there's a couple of good examples, but I would argue even there, I mean, you could be doing your own research and coming to the table with specific questions for a lawyer that could make that conversation more efficient, but you're still like referring to them. But then you're saying, is it, or is this law like outdated with a link that can actually maybe reduce the hours for that expensive hourly rate?
That is expensive. No,
but to be fair, yeah, there is like that kind of like we were talking about with internal comms, right? There's almost that urge to like, let's just cut this out entirely and let's just go with the tool and it's cheaper and this person can do it. But you really should be thoughtful about what you're like having the tool as part of the process to then enable the expert, right, for the sub area, whether it's benefits or payroll or whatever it is, obviously employee relations. Let me just ask you to dream a little bit. Like we talked about so many different like areas, right, where there's potential for shifts. And as you look ahead, where do you see just a ton of friction? What comes to mind where you feel like, okay, this has to be, and we would all welcome it, taken over and made automated, efficient, done but without like us needing to spend the time? What like comes to mind?
Man, it has to be taken over. I'm trying to think of like the, I feel like this will only be like lingo translated to people in the weeds, but I'm like anything related to box 12, like benefits, like filling that stuff out at the end of the year for people's W, like 4, W-2, all those type of things. And just those like heavy lifting, I feel like of those AI aspects. I feel like a lot of those like repetitive tasks as well too. Like when I think of like repetitive, I think of having to do like I-9 forms and stuff like that as well. But once again, I think you still need human oversight for an element of that because you're verifying someone's ID and whatnot. But I think just those type of like really in the weed type of, and when I think of those, I think of the benefits aspect, because that's like how much admin is involved in that, or even the HRIS aspect, like figuring out how that helps with reporting and being able to use it as a tool. I stand tall on stuff not being completely overhauled by AI, but maybe I just need to get there. But emphasizing the human aspect.
I wouldn't say that. You seem like open, but you're just like calling out the trade-offs, right? There's always trade-offs with any kind of technology. So then,
yeah, I feel like I'm like, hey guys, just a reminder, humans need to be here.
Yeah, don't forget us. Just to close out here, then, if you look ahead, Shelley, so what do you think are the, and kind of we're circling back to teams, like the current job market, but if you kind of look ahead into the future, what do you think are the skills that will separate resilient HR teams from the rest going forward? How can, in other words, we future-proof our HR function?
Ooh, I know this is probably going to sound generic, but this is always what comes with and what's needed with change. That's the number one rule in life, is that there always will be change. So that's probably why what I'm about to say does sound generic, but it's like, you need to be able to adapt. You need to be able to get through, like in change management, there's something called like the J curve. You need to be able to ride that straight out and keep navigating the different change that comes with it and have the adaptability, but also like the growth mindset aspect that comes with it, like being able to navigate the chaos that will ensue. And the thing of it is chaos will ensue, because that's what happens, is that you're always going, especially within HR, where you're managing people and people emotions, there's always going to be people on different sides of the scale. There's going to be people who are like, I hate this change, I don't want to ever do this change and be stagnant in the change. There's going to be people who are like, I've been waiting for this change since yesterday, where have you been with this? And then there's going to be people in the middle. And you have to be able to navigate all aspects of those people. You have to be able to decenter yourself. And that's one of my number one rules in HR, is especially when you're dealing with diverse employee population and just different personalities at the table, is that you need to decenter yourself and understand where other people are coming from and how they may react and how they may receive change and how they may react to change, and be able to anticipate like some of those behaviors to help people feel safe enough, psychologically safe enough to take that leap. Because if you don't change, you'll end up getting left behind, especially from a business perspective. And so what is it that you need to do, or organization needs to do, in order to make people feel safe taking that leap? And that's, like I said, decentering yourself, understanding the human aspect and the fear and the uncertainty that comes with change, and being able to make that and having the growth mindset to be able to adapt to whatever's occurring around you.
Could you help educate me on the J curve with change management? Because I feel like it sounds like it's very much central to what you're talking about. And you're, I think, talking about on a dual basis, change for the HR leader who is going to be experiencing new processes, technologies, demands from the organization, but also to enable change and meet people where they're at or who are in different parts of their journey, and being able to be sensitive to that, as opposed to, you know, I think that's what you're talking about with the decentering. But tell me about the J curve.
So with the J curve, it's just a standard, like, I feel like change management, like picture. So literally as I'm drawing it out, it's like you're picturing almost a J, and it's like where people start out with change, and then the people and like businesses as well. So it's like, they'll start out with the change, and because they're navigating the change, like business, like productivity, whatever it is, it will end up going down because people are navigating the change. They're trying to learn something new. They're trying to get, you know, used to whatever, this new system, this new product, this new process. So it's going to take time, because there's going to be a learning curve. Right. Everybody can't sit through one webinar, sit through one training, and then be like, all right, I'm a pro in this. For some, like for me, I know that I learn best when I'm like physically doing something, when I'm like in the weeds, figuring it out. That's how I remember. But you're not going to get it right the first time. So that's why as an organization, as a group of people, you're going to go in that downward curve first, because not everyone's going to get it. But then once people start getting it and start getting on the same page, that's when productivity can like resume and starts. You're going to see, was this change worth it? Basically, did we make it to the other side, and productivity surpassed what we were doing before, if that makes sense.
Absolutely. It's the concept that you're investing and you're in a negative territory for some time because you're investing in that change. But then if it's done right and you've made the right bet, then you're going to be coming out exponentially better than where you started. Okay. Thank you for going through that with me. That's like a transformation that can apply to so many different aspects in this case, with both taking on a new skill set within the HR realm or enabling an entire organization where, you know, everyone is doing a lot more change management these days than they used to. It's just becoming much more central to the value that an HR team can add. But thank you, Chelly, for this awesome conversation. I think there's so much ground we covered, starting with just the reality of the labor market for HR talent at this moment. And I think you had some wise yet restrained words of advice and encouragement. And it's often about your own mindset, which is, I think, an important nod to the reality that people are facing out there. But then it was interesting to go through a lot of the potential and the peril with AI and how a lot of us are navigating that in our organizations. So thank you for sharing this conversation. And for everyone out there who is looking to future-proof their own organizations and their own HR functions. Hope you found some value in this conversation as I did. And this is me signing off with Future-Proof HR. See ya. Thanks for joining us on this episode of Future-Proof HR. If you like the discussion, make sure you leave us a 5-star review on the platform you're listening to or watching us on. Or share this with a friend or colleague who may find value in the message. See you next time as we keep our pulse on how we can all thrive in the age of AI. Hey, it's Thomas again. One quick question before you go. Are you and your HR team tired of answering the same employee questions again and again in Slack? If yes, our Cleary AI-powered Slack bot is here to help. It takes routine employee requests and answers it automatically while freeing up time for you to take on more important tasks. At the same time, it automatically builds up an HR knowledge base as you go. It's quick to set up, works right in Slack, and you can try it for free. Just head on over to gocleary.com/HR-chatbot to install it. It's again, gocleary.com/HR-chatbot. Thanks again.